Good morning, everyone, and as always, thank you all for coming. I just want to reiterate that I apologize that there are no sheets. The yeshiva is heading towards the end of the regular year, which is through the end of July, but a lot of the boys are leaving this week, and therefore we had a more mazel last night, and the person who usually makes the sheets attended, and the event did not end until 1:30 in the morning, and as such, I had a little rachmanis on him that he didn't have to make the sheets for today. But they'll just have to take my word for it. I'll tell you exactly where all the sources are, and if you want to look them up afterwards, that's fine. The topic of today's shiur is something which is very relevant in our community, in every community where there is an Eruv, and that is, what do you do in a situation? There are times during the year when the Eruv goes down due to weather or sometimes due to vandalism. And the question always comes up, should it be announced or should it not be announced? And, this is a hotly debated point. And I think that I'd like to discuss the two sides of the equation. Naturally, one might think, just off the top of our heads, you say, well, of course you have to announce it. How could you not announce it? People are going to be Machal Shabbos. But we will see that there are two schools of thought on this, and I'd like to go through that today. The connection to the parasha, in case you were wondering, is that the Torah tells us at the end of the parasha that Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar v'yimtzu ish mekoshesh eitzim b'yom haShabbos, that they found a man who was doing some act of desecrating Shabbos that involved eitzim, that involved wood. The question is, what exactly was that he was doing? So in the Chazal, there are several opinions that are brought. One of them, which is well known, is that he was collecting them, which is a halacha of ma'amer, that he was collecting wood that was lying around, that apparently things that had been left lying around. But there is an opinion that says that he was ma'abrit al amas b'rishus harabim, that the guilt of this man was the fact that he was going in a public domain and he was carrying these eitzim in the public domain, and in that way he was violating the Shabbos, and the Torah proceeds to say what happened to this person and so forth. So I thought that being that in the parasha we have a reference to a person who carried on Shabbos and therefore was a Machal Shabbos, I thought it would be appropriate to speak about this topic. Now, just a little background, we have to understand that we are very fortunate living here in the communities in South Florida, that every community, every religious community in the South Florida area has an Eruv. And as such, we routinely carry in the street on Shabbos, and nobody thinks twice about it. And quite frankly, for a child growing up here in a community like this, probably will find it shocking in school at some point to find out that there is a malacha, there are actually two malachas of carrying on Shabbos, because they say, what do you mean carrying on Shabbos? We always carry in the street on Shabbos. Right, but the fact is, many of us perhaps can recall growing up in places where they did not have an Eruv. I myself grew up in a place where there was no Eruv, and therefore it was a reality of Shabbos life, that before you went out in the street, you had to check your pockets to make sure that you didn't have any tissues in your pocket or that you weren't carrying anything. Obviously, the malachas of chotzah, the act of carrying on Shabbos, actually constitutes two different acts. One of them, which is the most well known, is carrying something, transferring something from one rishus to another, from a domain, rishus hayotid, to rishus harabim, or vice versa, and therefore a person leaving his house carrying something into the street would have that issue, or leaving shul carrying something into the street. There is also a second malacha of chotzah, which involves carrying something, dalad amas b'rishus harabim, moving something that was already in the street, picking it up in the street and carrying it for a distance of dalad amas. That would only apply if you picked it up in the street and carried it for dalad amas, which is anywhere between 6 and 8 feet. Those are the two malachas of carrying on Shabbos. And in a place where there is no Eruv, as I say, you would have to check your pockets to see if you had no tissues, a child could not be taken to shul on Shabbos, which created a greater position on women because they were basically trapped inside their homes for the entire Shabbos. Couldn't go out with a stroller or anything of that nature. So, and many other things. The person could not carry a talis to shul, would have to make sure that everything was left there in advance, etc., etc. But these are the issues that have to do with the malacha of carrying. Now we find in the Chazal, and it's brought in the Gemara, the Masechta that deals with these laws and Masechta's Erevin, although the Masechta deals with various types of Erevin, not just this Erev that we're going to discuss today. But we know that there is a way to remedy this problem, and that is to make an Erev around the community, which commonly in the communities that we live in involves what's called a Tzuras HaPesach Erev. Tzuras HaPesach Erev means that essentially you have you set up a structure in which the neighborhood is enclosed by what appears to be doorways. How does it appear to be doorways? Because you take poles. We're called in the halacha called lefi. A lefi, you take a pole, a vertical pole, and you run a string on top of it, and thus it gives off the tzuras ha-pesach, it gives off the impression, it gives off the appearance of a doorway, it gives, because it has the two posts with the string on top, and it's doing such a thing around an entire neighborhood will help. And we'll make it based on the words of the Chazal, the Kabbalah that the Chazal has, that this will make it that the entire neighborhood is considered enclosed, and thereby is all considered Shusayachit, and one would be allowed to carry based on that Erev. This alone, those who are involved in the actual making of the Erev know that there is a second step which needs to be taken, is that you also need an Erev Chaseris. You need that everyone has to join together to make it as if it's one big, it's one one person's or one communal spot. But essentially this is, you know, without going into the nitty gritty, this is the concept of the Erev that we have. And the Erev that we have allows us to carry in the street on Shabbos. So Baruch Hashem, we are fortunate that here in North Miami Beach, so to Miami Beach, Hollywood, all the surrounding areas, there are Erevin, and as such, we have the great convenience that we can go to shul on Shabbos carrying a talis, etc. Now, there is, in any place where there's an Erev, there should be two institutions that are connected to this. Number one is that there is the checking of the Erev that takes place, or should take place, every week. And we'll see why that is, but the Erev should be checked. And in addition to that, there should be set up some sort of phone number or some sort of way of disseminating the information, which also we will discuss. But if you have the Erev hotline, you call the number and you try to find out if the Erev is up or not. Now, obviously, given the fact that the Erev consists of just what's called the Tzuras HaPesach, just the post with the string, so one could readily understand how it's possible that an Erev could fall down. In a city, perhaps it's made with a greater degree of strength, but you have other situations. Erevin are made in hotels and all kinds of other Jewish hotels, and people who go up to New York in the summer in bungalow colonies, camps, all construct Erevin, and oftentimes they're very flimsy, and it could happen that given a strong wind or something like that, that the Erev will come down. And thus we have the checking of the Erev and the Erev hotline. Now, it should be pointed out that let's say one did not know whether the Erev was checked or not. So the general principle in halacha is we have a concept in halacha called chazaka. Chazaka means that when in doubt, you assume that things have not changed. And therefore, if much in the same way that this morning we all made brachos before we put on our tefillin, and you'll say, well, how do you know? Maybe my tefillin aren't kosher right now. Because even though maybe when I got them they were, perhaps I had them checked somewhere along the line, but who knows? It could be that the paint on the letters, on the parashiyos of the tefillin could crack, And there could be some other issue that came up that maybe my tefillin are not kosher, so how can I say a brach on them? So the answer to that is that we rely on the chazaka. We say that, well, the last I knew for sure was that it was good, so when in doubt, I could continue to assume that it's good. And as such, one could make the argument that you shouldn't have to check an Erev, or you certainly should not have to call the phone number, because, well, the chazaka was up last week, so it's up this week too. However, we know, the post can tell us that we have a rule in halacha that we don't rely on such a thing. We don't rely on a chazaka, b'makom she'efshu levurit, in a situation where it is possible to check it out. If you can check it out, you can't rely on a chazaka, nor can you rely on, let's say, a rove. Sometimes in halacha we go by a majority, but if there's a way to check things out, you're supposed to do that. Okay, if you can, in terms of chazaka, a person is supposed to go and investigate it and not just rely on the chazaka. So when it comes to our tefillin, so it's not practical, it's not possible for a person to every day check it, open up his tefillin and open up the parshiyos and see everything is in order. So therefore, we rely on the chazaka. However, when it comes to something like the Erev, so then it's generally speaking quite doable to check, and you have, you know, especially they have committees in a lot of places, they have more than one person, doesn't fall on, I don't know here if that's the case, but you know, in many communities it does not fall on the exclusively on the shoulders of one person, and therefore you go around and you check it out. And so too, a person who wants to carry in the street on Shabbos really should find out before Shabbos. The reality is that when you come to shul Friday night, in every shul in this neighborhood, they announce whether the Erev is up or not. So even if you didn't call the number, so you could find out in shul, assuming you're going to shul Friday night. Of course, if you carried something to shul and something that you need, and then you come into shul and hear the Erev is down, you'll be in a difficult situation. But that's pretty much what people do. So either we call the number or we rely that we'll hear the announcements in shul. Okay, so that's really the case for investigating as to whether the Erev is up or not. As I say, there is a chazaka, there is a concept of chazaka that if it was up previously, when you could continue to assume that it's up. Obviously, the chazaka would not apply in the case of what's called a great reisa, in a case where something happened that would clearly make one suspicious, very likely that the Erev is down. If there was a hurricane, for example, during the week, so then you couldn't say, well, the Erev was up last week, so it's probably up now too. You couldn't say that because it's almost certain that the Erev is not up. But you know, barring things like that, if you didn't know, you could rely on the chazaka. But yes, we say l'chatchila that we are supposed to check the Erev. So now, so the question is, what happens though, the shaila that was discussed today really is most commonly relevant in a situation where the Erev fell down on Shabbos. In other words, if the Erev fell down during the week, so hopefully you have someone out there checking, and he will see that, or they will see that the Erev is down, and generally speaking, unless it was a catastrophic event, generally speaking, the Erev can be repaired. If the question of string came down, a pole came down, whatever it may be, these are not major repairs. So therefore, it could be done if in the proper time, if the Erev is checked before Shabbos. However, what happens, not all that uncommonly, is that sometimes you could have a big storm on a Friday night, and walking to shul Shabbos morning, lo and behold, the rabbi or anybody sees that, whoa, look at this, the string of the Erev is down. And thus the Erev has been broken, the community is no longer enclosed, and therefore by right we should not be able to carry in the street. So the rabbi walks into shul armed with this information, and lo and behold, as he walks in, he sees 8 baby strollers and several wheelchairs, and he realizes that this is not going to be a simple matter, because of the fact that there are people who have come to shul who need the Erev. And what are you going to do now? What are you going to tell them that, basically it's a dilemma. On the one hand, how could you not say the truth? How could you not say the Erev is down? After all, anyone who's going to carry is going to be violating Shabbos. On the other hand, it's a very difficult situation, because if you're going to say it, what do you expect these people to do? So in reality, what's supposed to be done is that in such a case would be to get a guy, or to get several guys to come and transport those people in need back to their home. However, it's often not practical to do that, and therefore we're left with the dilemma, what do we do? What do we do? So, yes, thank you. You can get a guy to fix the error, that is for sure. You can get a guy, if it's possible, if you can explain to him what to do, you can get a guy to fix the error, that is permitted on Shabbos, even if he had to do it in a way that he would be making a knot, which was the Malacha D'Oraisa, even though there is a question, can you tell a guy to violate Shabbos? We once discussed this about Amir al-Akam, telling a guy to do work for you on Shabbos generally is not something that a person should do. However, in the case of Tzarchei Rabim, in the case where it's the need of the community, you can get a guy to do it. The truth of the matter is that there are times that you don't need a guy. Sometimes the Jew can fix it on Shabbos. It's possible for if the Eruv can be repaired by simply tying the string came down, if you could do it in a way that you would not be violating Shabbos, let's say tying the bow or something like that in such a way that it'll hold for the short term, it'll at least get you through Shabbos, so then it would be possible even for a Jew to do. However, the common thing is in some communities they may even have a guy who is part of the committee that he knows, he's aware of what goes on with the Erev, and maybe they have a go-to guy that, he'll come help us, we need the Erev repaired. But a lot of times that's not the case. So the question is, what do you do? So is there a basis to say that, well, it's going to be a lot of problems, it's going to be very difficult for people, so let's just not say anything. So the truth of the matter is that in trying to come up with a heter for this type of activity, so the first place we would look would be the Gemara Maseches Be'ah on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. And the Gemara in Maseches Be'ah is discussing that there is a mitzvah that we know, there's a mitzvah in our Torah when it comes to Yom Kippur, so obviously we have to fast on Yom Kippur, but there is a mitzvah in the Torah of what's called Tosefes Yom Kippur, Tosefes Yom HaKippurim, that a person is supposed to add time to Yom Kippur, meaning that not just do we refrain from eating is the actual 25 hours of Yom Kippur, but not only that, but even a person is supposed to add on time from when it's definitely not Yom Kippur and add that on to Yom Kippur. That is a mitzvah saseh called being Moses on the time of Yom Kippur. This is commonly practiced, and almost every shul starts Kol Nidre well in advance of the deadline. There are other reasons that they do that as well, but on a Torah level, that by doing so, everyone who comes to shul is already fasting, is fulfilling the mitzvah of adding on to Yom Kippur. And this is a mitzvah in the Torah a person is supposed to do. So the Gemara Maseches Be'ah says that there were the times of the Gemara that there were women who maybe they didn't go to shul and they were not aware of this law. They were not aware of this Indian of Tosefes Yom HaKippurim. And what they would do was that they would eat and eat and eat and drink until the absolute deadline. They knew, even though I don't think they had watches or clocks, but they were able to tell when the sunset was, and they would go up until that time eating and drinking. And the question came up in the Gemara, should somebody say something to them? Should somebody get up and announce that you should not be doing this? So the Gemara tells us that Hanav Lehemli Yisrael, the Gemara in Daf Lamed Amud Aleph from Maseches Be'ah, says that the decision was made, Hanav Lehemli Yisrael, leave them alone. Leave these people alone. Don't say anything. Why? Because mutav sheyiyu shogegin va'al yiyu mezidim. Because it is preferable that if they're going to violate the law, that they should violate the law b'shogeg, they should violate the law unintentionally, rather than violating the law intentionally. Meaning that the concern was that if you're going to tell these people that they're not allowed to eat even earlier than the time of Yom Kippur, so there's going to be a number of them that aren't going to listen because they're so worried and anxious, or have to fast, or who knows if I'll be able to do it. So there are people that are going to continue eating all the way up to the deadline. So if you don't tell them and they do it, so then they're violating the law and the Torah, but they're doing it unintentionally because they don't know the law. So therefore, that's considered shogeg. However, if you tell them and they still don't listen, so now they're doing it b'mezid. Now they're doing it. They knew it was wrong and they did it anyway, which is obviously much worse. So therefore, the idea was put forth in the Gemara, mutzav she'yu shogegin v'alyum izidim. In this case, don't say anything, because if they're not all of them are going to listen, and therefore the ones who don't listen, by informing them of this halakha, you're going to cause a greater problem, because now they're going to do it the mazik. This is a principle in halakha that we have, that's in the Shulchan Aruch, mutzav she'yu shogegin v'alyum izidim. Now, when exactly this applies is a question, so the Gemara right away qualifies it. The Gemara says that can only be said by something which is midrabanan, but not something which is d'oraisa. The Gemara originally thought that, but this law that we're discussing is itself d'oraisa. So the Gemara says that really this law applies pretty much. However, between the conclusion of the Gemara here and the Rishonim, the one in particular, the Shita Sa'itur, that comes out that we only do this in situations where that which is wrong, yeah, you need two requirements. You need, number one, that you have to be certain that they're not going to listen, number one. And number two is that it has to be something that's not explicitly written in the Torah. If it's explicitly written in the Torah, everybody knows it's wrong, so then you can't, then this law doesn't apply, because then the presumption is that they really should know this anyway. It's not like a secret that you're sharing with them. Anybody who opened up a Chumash would know this. So when it comes to certain things, the rule doesn't apply, but in many cases in Halacha, the rule would apply. And this is the concept. Mutav Shiyu Shogigin, volume is even. So now, based on this, there are those who say that this would be the argument to not say anything about the Erev being down. Because inevitably, if it was on Shabbos, if it's on Shabbos and people have already, assuming the Erev's up, if someone came to shul in a wheelchair, or somebody came to shul in a child was brought to shul in a stroller or a baby carriage, so now if you tell the people that, sorry, the Erev is down, you can't carry, so maybe a good number of the people will listen and try to make some sort of alternate arrangement. People who it doesn't affect. A person who didn't come carrying to shul won't mind so much. All right, okay, big deal. I didn't carry anything here anyway. So I'll check my pockets and throw out the tissues, and that's the end of it. But what about a person who needs it? What about a person who's making a simcha that Shabbos and is relying on the neighbor's refrigerator to hold some of the material, or some of the food, etc.? So what about that person? So if you tell them, they're not going to listen, or they may not listen. There are some people that just won't listen. And why won't they listen? They'll say, but what do you mean by the God-fearing people? Why wouldn't they do it? So we know that the human nature is that when you hear such an announcement, you say, ah, come on, I know, they're really the Erev's up. They're just saying this because whatever. Or maybe, who said the Erev is down? Who said the rabbi knows it's down? It could be somebody who walked to shul and saw it, and this guy doesn't know anything about the laws of Erevin, and he thinks it's down, and it was not really down, and he told it to the rabbi, and they announced it, and there was a whole big panic. I will tell you, it has happened, such things, where there was a report given that the Erev was down, and upon further scrutiny, it turned out that the report was erroneous, because the person did not, and it happened in this neighborhood more than once, that the person thought that a certain pole was part of the Erev, it turned out it wasn't, or they thought it was down, it turned out it wasn't down, whatever it was, but naturally, when a person is in great need, you start to rationalize, and when you rationalize, you say, it's whatever, it doesn't, even though they announced it, but it's not such a big deal, and therefore I will carry it. So as such, we have the law of Mutav Shiyu Shogegin V'alyum Izidim. And in fact, we find in the Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, which was written by a very close student of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So he writes here in the footnotes in Perek Yud Zayin that he says that Gaon Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Shamati to Musav Lo Lefarsim B'chol Inyan. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was of the opinion that if the Erev goes down on Shabbos, you shouldn't say anything. Why? Ki Rabim Lo Yishmu B'cholam, because many people aren't going to listen. Okay, this is. Now, I don't know if he's projecting for other communities, but he's living in Shalayim, right? And I don't know, you know, where exactly the Shiloh came from, but he was saying that, he said, ah, come on, many people will not listen. And it's better that if they're not going to listen, so at least they'll do it. If you don't tell them, the air is down, so they'll violate Shabbos, but they'll violate Shabbos b'shogeg. And which is not a good thing. We know that for a person violating Shabbos b'shogeg in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, a person would have to bring a carbon chatos, right? So that's not a joke. But nevertheless, the alternative is worse, because if you tell them that the Erev is down and they carry anyway, so then they're violating Shabbos for Mezid. And on this basis, he ruled that the announcement should not be made. Now, there is another factor which we're going to get to in a moment. But this was the beginning. It sounds from the way it's written over that, excuse me, that this was a very big part of his habit. Yeah, sorry.
Is there any consideration to the exact ratio of...
Okay, so now, so the question is, is that right now?
100 people.
Right.
99
are listening to one. Okay, good. So
99 are all going to show.
Fine. So now the question presents itself, as Rav Lemel is saying, where do you draw the line on this? Like this example, you have 100 people in the community, 99 will listen and one won't. So does that justify it? Is that enough to say? It sounds from the way it's written here in the Sefer that many people won't listen, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, which implies obviously more than one. How many is many is unclear. But the truth of the matter is that this ruling that he said in and of itself is not really accepted because of a tshuva that's found in the Igros Moshe in the second volume of Chaim Siman Lamed. And it's very interesting that this tshuva goes back to 40 some odd years, actually 50 some odd years, where someone asked in general. And this concept, by the way, that we're discussing, Mutav Shiyu Shogigin, makes it that it doesn't just apply to Shabbos, it applies to any area of halacha. In other words, if you know a person is not going to listen, so don't tell them a certain law, because if you'll tell them the law, then they don't listen, so then they're doing it deliberately, whereas previously they were just doing it unintentionally. So a man wrote in to Rav Moshe Feinstein, Shiloh is not a rabbi, he's a member of a congregation, who wrote in a Shiloh. He said that they have a great debate going on, that there are people doing things wrong, and there are those who are saying that you shouldn't say anything to them because they're not the type that are going to listen if you tell them that it's wrong. So the other people said, yeah, but on that basis, you'll never teach anybody what the right thing to do is. So what are you supposed to do? You're not supposed to ever, a rabbi should not get up and give a shiur in halacha because of the fact that, hey, look, why should I educate the people? There are going to be people here that aren't going to listen, and if I tell them, so then they'll do it for amazing. Right? Like the old joke that they say over that, there were two fellows who had learned in yeshiva back in the day, in 1940, when the observance of mitzvahs in America wasn't what it is today. And they both decided to go into the rabbanus. They both decided to enter the field of the rabbinate. And some years later, they meet each other, and one guy starts complaining, fetching, I have so many problems in the community. They do everything's done wrong, and nobody listens to what I say. And the other fellow says, well, I don't have any such problems. In fact, I was machzir my entire community, lumutav, which literally means that I brought my entire community back to a good way. So he said, you brought your entire community, lumutav, to a good way. How did you do such a thing? So he said, very simple. Mutav shiyu shogin, v'alyum is even. I don't teach them anything. I don't give any shiurim. I don't tell anyone anything. And therefore, so it's wonderful, because whatever they do, it's all b'shogeg. And the Chazal said that it's better they should do it b'shogeg. So therefore, I have brought my entire community, lumutav. This is what he said. So the question was answered, Moshe Feinstein, that, so how do you, so what are you supposed to do? You shouldn't teach anything? So he says the following. So Rav Moshe says that really the issue of mutar shiyu shogin is only a case where people you're speaking to a select few individuals, and you know they're not going to listen. However, if there is a situation where there is a question, where you're speaking to a group, and there are those who will listen and those who won't, so he said, well, you have to tell the people who will listen what the right thing to do is. That's not, you have to teach Torah, you have to say what the right thing is. So some people won't listen, so they won't listen. But the fact is that many people will listen, and therefore you have to say the right thing. And on that basis, he said that absolutely the correct thing is to get up and to teach people the correct halachas. If there are going to be some that won't listen, what could you do? But in his opinion, it seems, if you look at the tshuva, it seems for sure that if the majority of people listen, there's no question, and even if a very strong minority were going to listen, that would also be no question. It's only in a case where the population that you're talking to, you know for sure they're not going to listen, so then you have this exemption, then you have this special dispensation, don't say anything. But in a place where many people will listen, so then you should say something. And this psak of Rav Moshe seems to have carried the day, and on that basis it's announced in shul. It's announced in shul, certainly going into Shabbos, right? In other words, we're talking now about what happens if the Erev falls on Shabbos, but theoretically, if the Erev fell on Friday or Tuesday or whatever, it would be the same thing. If you didn't have a chance to fix it, don't say anything. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach might have said, don't say anything because it's going to cause problems. However, Ramosha Feinstein's opinion was that if there are definitely people that will listen, you have to say the truth. And that's what a person should do, yes.
It's a very practical situation where you're on your way out, and somebody's going to shul for the next million, it's already after the time.
Right.
They're pushing.
So what should you do? Okay, so that's a very common case. That you went to the early minion and you heard the air is down, and now by the time the early minion finished, let's assume it's already after the Zman of the beginning of Shabbos, and now you see someone coming to Shul Karen. Should you say something? A similar thing would be if the air was down and you see someone going in the street carrying something, what should you say? So on the basis of the mutav shiyu shogin alone, it sounds like that it would depend. To get up and say in shul, so that you definitely, it sounds like it's following the opinion of Moshe Feinstein, which is generally done, at least in America, that his opinion held. So we would announce it. And that's, I think, why they do announce every Friday night the status of the Erev. However, if you see someone in the street on Shabbos, and now you say to yourself, they're probably not going to listen. They're probably not going to listen, because if I say something right now, then they're put in a very, very difficult situation. So then, it sounds like he would also agree, not only Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, but even Rav Moshe would agree that you shouldn't say anything. Because what's going to help to tell him? Let's say he's pushing someone in a wheelchair or whatever it may be, and he's carrying something valuable in the middle of the street. What are you going to do? He's going to put it down? It'll be stolen, it'll be taken. So in a situation like that, it sounds like you have the right to say, mutar shiyu shogin, don't say anything. If, however, the person is a God-fearing person, and there is a way to remedy it, you know, maybe let's say a block away from the shul, and there happens to be a neighbor, a guy who's right there, and say, do me a favor, we're in a tough spot, would you mind just pushing this stroller or pushing this wheelchair or whatever it may be to the shul? If you could do that, then it's very likely the person will listen. But if in a case where the person will not listen, so then it sounds like Chodeus, you should not say anything, because telling him is only going to make it worse. Okay, yes.
What about your simple, for example, you bring food in from the next door, and then someone of your restaurants says, hey, did you know you're ever down?
Right.
And you got enough from that food that you carried on.
Well, if it was carried already, and we'll see in a minute what the status is of carrying in such a situation, which will affect directly the answer to your question. So this would be the first attempt at Heter, but this Heter has its shortcomings. This Heter has its shortcomings because it's limited in scope. It depends if the person will listen, it depends if people will listen, etc. Now, however, there is perhaps a much greater heter to allow one to not say anything about the Erev being down on Shabbos, and that is based on the principle of what's called halacha mesasek. Okay, there, we know that in when we speak about a person violating the law of the Torah, so there are different levels. So there's the mazid, where the person knew it was wrong and did it anyway. Then there's a situation where the person did not, the person did it unintentionally. Now, what is considered unintentionally? So when it comes to Shabbos, when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, the case of Shogeg, which we mentioned earlier, the person with Michal Shabbos, the Shogeg has to bring the carbon tatos in the time of the Mikdash. The person certainly has to tshuva for such a thing that I unintentionally violated Shabbos. So in the halacha, we are told that there are two scenarios of that. The two scenarios of Shogeg is one scenario would be where the person didn't realize it was Shabbos. For example, that the person they lost track of the time, or they lost track of the day. Somehow, a person, very absent-minded person, and he wakes up in the morning, and he used to always make himself a cup of coffee, and he woke up, he's still in a fog, and he thinks it's Monday, and he's getting ready to go to work, and he turns on the fire and makes himself a cup of coffee, and then it hits him, oh my gosh, I see people out the kitchen window walking to shul, carrying their special Shabbos halachim. It's Shabbos today, right? So that would be an example where the person violated Shabbos unintentionally, because even though he knew exactly what he was doing, but he didn't realize it was Shabbos. Or you could have another situation of Shogeg, where the person did something, but they did not know that that constitutes a violation of Shabbos. For example, there are many halachas in the Hilchos Shabbos that people are not aware of. And among the 39 halachas, it's a very vast body of halacha, the Hilchos Shabbos. And therefore, it quite commonly happens that a person didn't know. He didn't know that he could certain thing he couldn't do. So he went ahead and did it anyway. So in such a case, that's considered the shogeg, because I knew what I was doing, but I did not think that this involved a violation of Shabbos. I didn't think that this act, I was ignorant, I did not know that this constitutes a violation of Shabbos. But then there's a third level. The third level does not often get discussed. The third level is a lower level, and that is called misasik. Literally, the word misasik means the person is involved, meaning that the person is loosely translated, did not realize what he was doing. As for example, very, very common case is that a person is standing in their home on Shabbos and they're engaged in a conversation and they lean against the wall, and in the process of leaning against the wall, they hit the light switch and the light went off, or the light went on. So a lot of people, when this happens, get very shaken, oh my gosh, I violated Shabbos. But the truth of the matter is that this type of violation on Shabbos is very minimal, because you didn't know what you were doing. In other words, you didn't plan on doing it. It's not a question you didn't know was Shabbos, and it's not a question that you didn't know you can't do this on Shabbos. You just didn't realize what you were doing. You were talking to somebody, and you leaned against the wall, and you hit the light switch. So this is called misasik. Okay? Now, that type of case of misasik, the halacha is such a person does not have to bring a carbon. If a person did that on Shabbos, I remember I once had this with a member of my family, a female member of my family who did this, and the person was so totally distraught that, oh my gosh, I'm a terrible person, I was Michal Shabbos. And I said that, you know, if the Beit Hamikdash was standing now, you wouldn't even have to go bring a carbon to atone for what you did, because this is called misasik. Okay, now, in our case of the Erev, if one looks in the Gemara Masechta Shabbos and the Shulchan Aruch, there are various scenarios of what's called misasik. Now, it happens to be that our case of the Erev, according to most poskim hold that a person on Shabbos who is carrying, but he thinks that the Erev is up, so that is not considered that he did it for shogeg. Because the difference is, you'll say, wait a minute, didn't we just say that shogeg is where you thought something was permissible on Shabbos and really it wasn't? So the answer is, this is different, because this that you did is permissible on Shabbos. In other words, it's not that you were ignorant. Now, the person who doesn't know, for example, a person who doesn't know certain laws of Borer, that there are certain laws of selecting on Shabbos, you're not allowed to take away the bad from the good. If a person, you know, has a bowl of cherries and there are a few rotten ones in the bowl, so on Shabbos one is not allowed to pick out the bad ones and throw them out, because that would be a violation of the law of Borer. Many people don't know this, right? So therefore, this is an example where the person didn't know that what they were doing was wrong, and they did it anyway. But here you have a situation where the person, I know you're not allowed to carry on Shabbos, I know that, but I'm under the impression that the Erev is up. So therefore, what I'm doing is less than unintentional, because why should I be blamed for this? I know the law. You can't call me out for being ignorant. I know 100% the law. But the fact is that my understanding is the Erev is up. So therefore, what I am doing without any recognition of the fact that it's a malacha on Shabbos, because I know that such a thing in a place where there's no Erev is considered a malacha of Shabbos, but I am under the impression that the Erev is up. So therefore, what I am doing is unintentional, even though I know that theoretically it would be wrong. Because in this situation, I have reason to believe that what I'm doing is correct. And it's not based on ignorance. So this, according to most poskim, is with our case of the person carrying in the street on Shabbos with the assumption that the Erev is up, and in reality the Erev is down. So the violation of Shabbos in such a context would be less than a shogeg. This would be called misaseh. And as we said, a misaseh does not have to atone for his deed. A misaseh does not have to bring a carbon for what he did wrong, but rather, we just say, all right, you know, what happened happened, but it does not. It was less than a shogeg, and therefore a person would not be considered in the category that he would have to bring a carbon. Okay, we find this is the Gemara gives an example of this, a very fascinating thing. The Gemara discusses on Dafayin Gimel Masechta Shabbos. In the interest of saving time, I won't read the whole Gemara, but the Gemara here discusses the case of a person who was carrying, thinking that he was in a Rishus HaYochid, and really was in a Rishus HaRabim. And the Gemara says explicitly that would be an example of a Misaseh. That person, because he knows he's not allowed to carry, but he thinks he's in a place where you are allowed to carry. So therefore, his violation of Shabbos is not based on any sort of ignorance, but rather it's based on a misconception that I think that here, this is a Rishus HaYochid, and really it's not. So therefore, this would be considered a case of misaseh. That being so, then it sounds like an open and shut thing. So perfect. So that the Erev is down, if the Erev is down, so don't say anything. You don't even announce it Friday night. Why should you announce it Friday night? What's going to happen? People are going to carry in the street on Shabbos? So what? What are they doing wrong? If you would stop the person and say, excuse me, why are you carrying on Shabbos? They'll say, you're allowed to carry on Shabbos in the Erev here. They don't know the Erev is down. And we just said that's misasik, and misasik is less than shogeg. So if that's true, so then it comes out, it's not a violation of Shabbos at all, and as such, it should be mut. However, it's not so simple, because we find in the Shuvas Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in the very beginning, the eighth Shuvah under the Tzedek Aruch Chaim, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says a chiddush, a very, very controversial chiddush, a very hotly contested, that he wants, and by the way, I just want to add, that this law of misaseh does not only apply by the laws of Shabbos, it also applies by every area of halacha. So for example, there's a case where a person, time of the Beis HaMikdash, where a person slaughtered an animal thinking that it was a regular animal, and he was unaware of the fact that his neighbor had consecrated this animal should be for a carbon. That the person said that this animal should be designated to be a carbon. Now we know that an animal that's designated to be a carbon can have to be brought as a carbon, and certainly cannot be slaughtered outside the domain of the Beis HaMikdash. That's a serious violation. Shchut Echut, that is a serious violation of halacha to do that. And this fellow went ahead and did that. So the Gemara says that this is misaseh, that he's absolved because of the fact that again, if you would ask him, he would say, you know the law? Yeah, I know the law. I know you're not allowed to slaughter an animal for a carbon outside of Beis HaMikdash, but who said this is such an animal? I didn't think this was such an animal. So it applies in such a case as well. Okay, comes along Rabbi Kiveger, in the Shuvas Rabbi Kiveger, and based on a kasha that he has on the Gemara Masechet Bava Kamma, a difficult question, so he wants to say the following Kiddush. He wants to say that even if you will say that this is the case in the Sase, which it is, but, and even though it is true that a person who is Misasek is absolved from bringing a carbon, however, says Rabbi Kiveger, that does not mean that the act is permissible. The act is not permissible, says Rabbi Kiveger. Just that a person who did such an act would not be liable to the penalty that is incurred by a person who doesn't have Erev Shogeg. Meaning that, yeah, you would not have to bring the carbon. But on the other hand, it's still usher to do such a thing. And therefore, based on this fact of Rabbi Kiveger, the situation now changes. Because now you'll say, well, if the person carrying on Shabbos, and the Erev is down, the person is being Mechal Shabbos. In other words, previously we would have said, this is not Shul Shabbos, this is Misaseh. This is an the greatest form of unintentional violation of Shabbos, where I know exactly what I'm doing, I know it's Shabbos, I know that there is a prohibition against carrying, but I'm under the clear impression that there's an error here. So therefore, I'm carrying and I know what I'm doing, but it's totally unintentional. Says Rabbi Kiveger that even if that's true, but there is still an isser involved in doing such a thing. And as such, he doesn't address the case of the heir specifically. He's saying this to answer a kasha on a Gemara, but based on this yisod, which he put in halacha l'maisa, he said, the question was asked to him, that if somebody is doing this an isser, they don't know that it's usser, meaning that they're under the impression that for certain reasons it's really allowed to do, it's not ignorant. Should you say anything to them? So Rabbi Kiveger said you should say something, which would apply in our case to the Erev, because of the fact that even though there's no liability, nevertheless the person is doing an Isser, the person is violating Shabbos. That is the opinion of Rabbi Kiveger, and as such, we would be in trouble. However, this is, as I said before, this is a highly contested ruling that generated a tremendous amount of debate, and many people wrote subsequently discussing this one of the more well-known Shuvas of Rabbi Kiveger, that it generated a great deal of controversy. So at the same time that Rabbi Kiveger lived, there was a very great Gaon whose name was Rabbi Yaakov Warburbaum. Yaakov Warburbaum is known to us as for his very famous svarim that he wrote in Halacha, Sefer Kol Nesivos HaMishpat, Sefer Kol Chavos Das, many, many famous svarim that he wrote, a great, great Kosek, and he took issue with what Rabbi Kiveger said. He was older than Rabbi Kiveger, but he wrote something which clearly showed that he did not agree, and that is that he wrote a book, he wrote a small book on the Lord of Pesach, which is called Mekar Chaim, very small book, and he wrote many, many svarim, but one of them in Hilchos Pesach called Mekar Baruch, and he discusses there the law about a person who on Pesach did not know that they had chametz in their house. They didn't know. They thought they cleaned out the whole house for Pesach, and it turned out that they really had chametz that they were unaware of. And in the poskim, this is referred to as shigigas avera, that the person who had the chametz in the house without realizing it is considered that they violated the law of Pesach b'Yirah b'Yimatzeh, that they had chametz in their home, but it was considered b'shogeg. So comes the Mekar Chaim, and he says, I don't understand. He says, why is this called b'shogeg? This should be misaseh. Because this person is aware of the fact that he now has come to the house on Pesach. This person is under the impression that he cleaned his entire house on Pesach. But unbeknownst to him, he missed something. He doesn't realize it. He missed something. He forgot a certain room, whatever. He just missed it. And in that room, there's chametz. So, the Mekar Chaim, I understand. So why is that quote that he did in the Shogeg? And based on this question, he ends up coming up with a result that the law, a very interesting yisod, that the law of Misasek only applies to an avera that requires an action. An avera that in order to violate the Torah, you have to have taken a specific action. That's when the law of Misasik applies. But when it comes to Chametz on Pesach, the violation of Chametz on Pesach does not require an action. Right? You don't have, in other words, eating Chametz is an action. But having Chametz in your house is a passive thing. It's not, in other words, one violates the law in the Torah passively. I simply have Chametz in my house. I didn't do anything with the Chametz on Pesach. But I have Chametz in my house. So he wants to say, the Makar Chaim wants to say, that a person who didn't properly get rid of all the Chametz, the law of Messiah, well, thought they did, but really didn't. So that's not a Mitzvah, because the violation involved does not require an action. But whatever the case may be, without getting into the technicalities of that, clearly he is of the opinion that a person who did not know something, he did not realize that what he was doing, he knew the law, but he thought that what he was doing was permissible, is considered a mizasek, and he says that if one looks in his writings, it seems very clear that he holds that there's nothing wrong with such a thing. That would not be an isser either. That would not be an isser. This is the way the Makar Chaim comes out, that in the case of mizasek, there is no isser involved. So thus, we have a great machlokas amongst the Gedolei Achronim, Rabbi Kivager on the one hand, Makar Chaim on the other hand, Rabbi Kivager is of the opinion that a mizasek, even though it does not incur the liability of a carbon, nevertheless is considered an isser, whereas the Makar Chaim says that it does not involve even an isser. This is such a minimal violation, so to speak, of Shabbos that it's not even usser. It's not usser, and it's all good. It does not involve an isser. So obviously, these two opinions impact directly on our shaylos, because our shaylos is exactly this. Right? A person is carrying, thinks it's okay. Should you say anything or not? Well, according to Rabbi Kivager, it sounds like you should say something to the person, or it sounds like at the very least, you should certainly get up, and maybe the person in the street, you have the other heter of Mutav Sheyushokin Ha'yum Adidim. But the question is, should you say in shul? So, according to Rabbi Kivager, yeah, you should say in shul, because you'll stop people from doing something wrong. The people who will listen will be stopped from doing something that's wrong. Whereas, according to the Makar Chaim, why should he announce it? Why should he announce it? What's going to happen? Why should he tell anybody? What's the worst thing that's going to happen? Is that someone's going to carry in the street? Fine. So what does that constitute? That's not shogeg. That's misasek. And in his opinion, misasek, there is no isler. And therefore, they're not doing anything wrong. So just let it go. So now, of course, you'll ask that if he's right, so then why should he ever even fix the error? Just let it go. Right? That's it, very simple. You never have to repair an error. Just don't tell anyone that it's down. Don't say anything, because it drives people to policy. Don't make any announcements. Let everyone assume it's up. And if the error is down, it's no problem, because according to the Makar Chaim's opinion, it's all good. So that is a question that is a good question which has to be discussed, but not at this moment. But the fact of the matter is that this would be the basis for not saying anything on Shabbos. Now, I know it's over the time, but I just want to add that one has to consider that in our case of the Eruv, it's even a little bit better than that, because of the fact that we work with the premise that the communities that we live in are not considered Rishus HaRabim in our Torah. Because the reality is that, in other words, there's a big dispute. This would definitely be a topic for a different share, but there is a big dispute what it requires in order to have a domain that's considered just a rabbin by the Torah standards. And there is an opinion which is passed in the Shulchan Aruch by the Ramah that in order for a place to have that status, it has to be that 600,000 people pass through that area on a given day, or pass that street, or whatever, on a given day. And if you don't have that, it's not a Rishus HaRabim. Now, in our community here, you don't have that, so therefore, you say it's not a Rishus HaRabim. Now, that does not mean that therefore there's no problem, because there is a rabbinic law that a place which is a public place but does not quite have all the requirements of Rishus HaRabim, it is still forbidden to carry in, and that is called a karmelis. That's a special category of a place you're not allowed to carry into or carry from. But the fact is that that means that it's not a d'oraisa, it's a d'rabbanan. Now, it happens to be that in the laws of Erevin, there is a difference between whether you're dealing with Rishus HaRabim, d'oraisa, or d'rabbanan. The type of Erev that's made in our community, which is a Suras HaPesach Erev, only works in Rishus HaRabim, would not work in Rishus HaRabim, d'oraisa. It is possible to make an Erev in Rishus HaRabim, d'oraisa, but it would require much more elaborate things. You would have to have doors in certain places that you could actually close off the area, and short of that, you would not be able to carry. The fact is, we don't have an Erev like that here. So the reason why we don't is because, as I mentioned, it's ruled in the Shulchan Aruch, the Pesach of the Ramah is that, you know, that since we don't have 600,000 people, you need 600,000 in order to make the Rishus HaRabim, and we don't have that. So therefore, we go with the belief that the Rishus, that the place that we live in, is only a Darabana. Which means that when it comes to our discussion, you're dealing with a misaseh of an issa d'rabbana. So in that case, perhaps there's a greater leniency to say that even with all due respect to the opinion of Gideger, but you're dealing here, you're not dealing with the Torah law, you're dealing with rabbinic law, and after all, you do have the great author of the Makar Chaim, who's a revered opinion in his own right, who said that there's no problem, and therefore you can go on that. So this is the issue. This is the issue. The fact of the matter is, it's written, there's a book that was published a number of years ago called Contemporary Erevin Contemporary Laws of
Erevin Contemporary Times.
Erevin Contemporary Times, something like that. A small book that was written by Rabbi Deckhafer that is widely circulated, that would happen in every one of the local schools. That he writes there that he heard from a relative of his who came from the city of Brisk in Lithuania, that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim Brisker, when he served as the Rav of Brisk, gave the opinion that if the air is down, you should not say anything. Because of this fact that it's misaseh, and as he held like the Makar Chaim, that it's misaseh, and misaseh is permissible, it's not a violation of a law, and therefore he said that you should not say anything. In the sefer that I referred to earlier, Shmir Shabbos Kol Chatza, I didn't read the entire quote from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, but in addition to his feelings that you shouldn't say anything because of the fact that people are going to do it anyway intentionally, he also said that, and especially he's dealing with the fact that you have a situation of misasik. He said that it's misasik. He said to kill mishogin, even to have a misasik to the rabbanim. Okay? So he says, Sir Shlomo Zalman put that into his sock as well and said that's why you shouldn't say anything. However, there are many who agree with Rabbi Kivager. It's brought down there. Rabbi Aaron Kuttler, one of his svarim, it goes to great lengths to defend the opinion of Rabbi Kivager that really it is usur, and therefore we have room for two opinions. So, practically speaking, I think it would come out the following. If it's on Shabbos and you're in the street and you see a person who it's going to be almost impossible for them to function if you tell them the air is down, it's better not to say anything. Just don't say anything. You put them in a very difficult spot, and especially if you assess that they're probably not going to, you know, do what's necessary. They're maybe too timid or uncomfortable approaching the guy to ask them to help out, or it's too much of a trip, it's too much of an imposition. So just don't say anything. It's not worth it. You have the Mutav Sheyishogin, you have the opinion of the Makar Chaim, who says that it's Misasik, the Rabbanan, or Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's opinion, or Chaim Soloveitchik's opinion. You have all these leanings opinions. However, in a shul on Friday night, so then it's a question of, you know, in a shul on Shabbos morning, let's go to that case, in a shul on Shabbos morning, so it's the rabbi's call. In other words, he has to sort of get a feel for what's going to happen if he says something. Perhaps if you're in a place where nobody really carried anything of consequence to shul, so then you might as well tell him, because why not? You can make everybody happy, you make Ricky Baker happy, everybody will be, you know, taken care of, and it's no big risk. However, if you see that it's not so simple, so then there are two options. You can either totally say nothing, just ignore the whole thing, Or you could go on an individual basis and whisper to some people, you know, don't tell anyone that the air is down. Yeah, those are the choices of the rabbi, and they really should be respected one way or the other. And if the decision is made not to say that the Erev is down, for a person, sometimes people get very excited, oh my gosh, I saw the Erev down. You have to be very careful, because you're playing with fire, it could make the situation a lot worse. And if the rabbi made the decision not to say anything, then don't say anything. However, Friday night, going into Shabbos, so then it's already ahead of the time. So most likely, in many, many cases, you know, in this time of the year, it's true that we have the two minyanim, you could have trouble. But you know, very often, you know, only men, mostly men come to shul Friday night. Not so many women come to shul, which means that even those who do very rarely come with a baby stroller or anything like that, that the kids usually put to sleep at that hour. So therefore, generally speaking, you're not going to have a problem. And if that's the case, so then I think the practices in the shuls that they should be announced. That's what I think they make the announcements every Friday night. The Erev is checked in its kosher. If they would ever not make that announcement, everybody would know that, you know, even though they announced it in the positive, but they would announce it, you would know the negative too. So that's as far as that goes. In the case with the simcha, where you have your food by the next door neighbor, in a situation where they announce that the Erev is down, for that you have to hope that you have a friendly guy who is in the neighborhood that you could approach and ask them to help you out. But if the air is down, then you're stuck. It should be really left up to the rabbi of the shul to make that decision, and whatever he says should be respected.